It's Wednesday, July 27th, 2011, and you're listening to episode 241 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 48 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
And we're here this week, Chad.
We are?
Oh, yes, we are.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's funny is we had a role reversal because while we were out at dinner, I got a work-related call, which fortunately, unlike your guys' nightmare last week, I was able to resolve mine in a timely manner. But in the delay, it's past Chris's bedtime. The nurses at the home require him to, you know, basically go straight to bed right after Matlock. So he is
not before his sponge bath.
He is now no longer able to join us. But that's all right. That just means the show is going to be easier to edit and more filled with intellectual commentary. Chris, if you don't like that, be on next time. So anyway, real quick, I'll remind you guys, next year, March 24th through April 1st.
Who could plan that far ahead?
Me. Of 2012. Fear the Boot is co-sponsoring, along with Mayfair Games, the Gamer Cruise done through Kim. So if you are interested in joining us for a Caribbean cruise with some gaming and just, if nothing else, just hanging out with fellow gamers and enjoying the islands and all the good stuff that's down there, then be sure to check the show notes for a link to that. And as I said the first time I mentioned this, if you think a cruise is out of your price range, you may be surprised to find that, yeah, it's going to cost you some money, but it really ain't any worse than something like a trip to Gen Con. So at least contact Kim and see if you can work something out with her to make this more affordable for you, because we would love to see some booters join us on this cruise.
Mm-hmm. And since Fear the Con won't be until May, you don't have to worry about having the money spent in March.
Yep. You've got right. You have all of April to resave your money to join us for Fear the Con.
You can come back with a healthy tan or
carcinoma melanoma.
Red. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Bright red and burnt.
So
prepared for the con.
That is the one thing I don't like about cruising in March, because generally it's great. It's a really wonderful time of year to go because the weather's great, you're not in the rainy season, and you haven't hit summer vacation. But the one bitch is, if you want to try and build some kind of like a weak base tan or something so you don't fry instantly in the Caribbean sun, you're coming out of winter.
Yeah, you can't do it here in St. Louis.
Yeah, so that's
real fine mat of hair.
Yeah, well, you have protective fur. I mean, it's the same way that I could take my dog to the Caribbean, get back and shave her, and her skin would still be stark white because of the fact that she's got this protective.
I would burn on the drive before you ever get on the boat. So it makes no difference to me.
Well, yeah. Banner topic for today was brought up by us talking about how Arthur, aka Noble Bear, reacts to Harry Potter discussions. Mm-hmm. And we made an observation about geek culture that I think this is somewhat true of all subcultures, but seems to be uniquely and exceptionally true of our subculture. People tend to bitch about the things they hate. They will spend the most time giving the most vitriol about things they don't like. But amongst geeks, we bitch the most about the things we love. You can tell a geek likes a series if they will spend a 2-hour dinner doing nothing but dissecting everything that is wrong with it.
I have a great quote here that's in my sig line on the forums from Goat Unit. It says, "Geek implies some sort of hard-won expertise with something trivial and an unduly bloated sense of relevance regarding that thing."
That's a mouthful.
And basically what that means is DC screwing up Superman.
Whoa.
See?
Whoa. How so, Wayne?
Oh, I could rant on about this for an hour. So I read an article today about what they're doing after the reboot, and I've been hopeful. I mean, I knew Grant Morrison was going to write it. So
you are an overly optimistic person.
But, you know, I was hopeful they were going to do something good with it. And then I'm reading through this article, and they go on about how, well, this new Superman will be more Kal-El than Clark Kent. He's going to be the alien. You know, he's going to be a more modern, more brooding Superman. Why would Superman brood? Batman broods. We don't need a brooding Superman.
Well, see,
that's just
thing.
Ridiculous.
Batman is not going to brood anymore. Batman is going to be all rainbows and sunshine shooting out of his ass, and it's going to be great. He's glad that his parents are dead. They were deadbeats.
Well, they're killing Ma and Pa Kent, too. They won't be alive anymore, so...
Wow.
Oh,
now that is. It is.
They can both sit there and go, my parents are dead.
But see,
I'm Superman.
Here's the thing.
I'm the goddamn Superman. My parents are dead.
I think the reason this is so peculiar to geeks, at least in the extremity that it occurs, is because of the fact that, like every subculture, we love our hobby. Okay, we love the stuff that we're into. But I think we're also intelligent and picky enough to realize where it falls short of at least our perceived perfection, what we want it to be. We can look at something and say, you know, it could have been so much better if they had just blah, blah, blah. And sometimes that's subjective. Sometimes it's objective.
Have you ever seen a sports fan screaming at a television set that can't hear him?
I have indeed. And this is why I'm saying it's not unique to our culture. But having hung out with sports fans, including where I was the only geek surrounded by sports fans, so it was like being at the zoo. I'm observing them in their natural habitat. And some of this comes from the fact that right now the...
Have you ever been to a baseball game where they're waving the white flags or the white towels? Does that make them catch the ball better?
Worse than that, I was at a baseball game once with my wife, and we're there with Cardinals hats on, and we realized that everyone in our section drove into town to root for the other team. So we're looking around. There's no more red around us. Everyone's cheering when the Cardinals do bad. And it's like,
now might be a little too late, but there is a home and visitor section to the stadium. You might just a little something to think about next time, especially if they're from Philadelphia. They are not always so nice.
Free tickets are free tickets.
Okay, fair enough. Maybe that's why they were free. It was like, hey, you want to know how to get Wayne killed?
Or abducted by aliens.
We think we'll tone our energy down a lot right now. We'll just sit here.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. It's not unique to geeks. I'm just saying that I see it in geeks to a level, to a continuity, a persistence that I don't see in other subcultures.
No, I see it in other subcultures. I think a geek is a geek is a geek is a geek, whether it's for role-playing games, comic books, Battlestar Galactica, or Glee, or baseball, or bowling, or fishing. I think that people will geek out when you can have a convention on a topic.
Right.
Like fishing. There are fishermen supply retailers there selling stuff. There are fishing experts. There are fishing celebrities.
Yes, here's the distinction I would draw. When I'm around those people from other subcultures, in some cases, I'm a member of those other subcultures. It's not like an RPG geek is all that I am. Those people will spend hours and hours and hours discussing the things they love, pursuing the things they love, maybe even discussing them in depth. What they're not doing is perfectionist bitching.
If somebody misses
a catch, they might say, man, he really screwed that up. At lunch the following day, there might be 15 minutes of, that guy screwed up, why didn't he catch the ball? There will not be 2 or 3 hours of whiteboarded diagrams on what's wrong with catching today. Oh, yes.
No. There are people who still talk about the 1976 pop fly that was missed at some and such World Series game. I mean,
but how often do you hear that compared to Han shot first?
Exactly.
Well, yes. I mean, exactly. We hear that a little bit more because we're at IT, but I mean, I don't know. I still hear, even in IT, I still hear a lot about, oh, you remember so-and-so in the 1969 such-and-such a game that did such-and-such and such-and-such?
Sure, like, but walking around, I've seen a lot of Rams shirts. I haven't seen a whole lot of shirts, and by whole lot of I mean any shirts, that have quaint little slogans about what the Rams are doing wrong.
I have seen Cardinal shirts that say, and I quote, slamma lama ding dong on them.
That's positive, though, and that's not bitching.
Well. Yeah, I think the fine point of that we're talking about here is the vitriol and the hatred that the geeks get into about our beloved things.
I'd say there is no vitriol worse than a book fan whose book got made into a movie.
Oh, yeah, yes. Case in point. I mean, that's the kind of thing we're talking about here. I will give you...
I wonder
you,
if Daniel Steele fans I bitch about those
well,
movies.
They will. It's for, like you mentioned Glee earlier, the Glee, whatever the hell they call
Gleeks.
Themselves. The Gleeks will turn themselves into purple monkeys, but that's beside the point.
Really?
You know,
Chris is a Gleek. Is he a purple
And with
monkey?
Sports, I think, you know, people get upset about, you know, some actions. It's not about as much about a hatred of the sport of baseball. Whereas what we're talking about is it'll be like an like more of an intellectual idea or something. It's nothing to that level.
Nothing intellectual about a Green Lantern versus Green Hornet debate.
You're defining intellectual as meaning, you know, like a higher, so like a higher educational type thing. I'm just saying that it is intellectual debate because it is ideas. I'm not communicating it well, but I'm not using the word to mean that it's.
You've changed the definition of the word intellectual.
No, I'm not.
Excellent.
No, I'm using, it's one of the definitions of intellectual. I mean, you look it up in a dictionary, it's got four or five definitions.
Intellectual property doesn't mean the property is smart.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, intellectual property is different than you just say I'm
the
an intellectual.
Phantom Menace is an intellectual property.
I think we have defeated your argument that it doesn't work here.
Damn!
So there you go. That's what I'm getting at. It's like, yeah, you see you'll see the people get adamant and stuff about sports and very agitated and passionate. But I do agree. I think it's different than what we're really talking about here as the hatred of our own things that we love.
In detail with diagrams and drawings and theories and research about things we love, not things we hate. We hardly talk about the things we hate.
I guess I cross the genres because I am full of hate. I hate. I hate. As many of you people that know me know. So I think I go.
Pat, off top of your head, three things you hate.
People. Well, that one covers it pretty much.
Okay, so not people. What are three things that aren't people?
I hate. I hate people. I hate things that people do. See, you got me there. Okay,
he hates being put on the spot.
I hate Dan.
I hate numbered lists.
I hate. Yeah,
I hate the fingers I'm counting on right now.
No, I just have to take the opposite.
I hate clouds.
Damn,
I do love one kind of cloud, but we won't talk about
it. I know the Mammatus clouds that Carl introduced
you to. My favorite type of cloud now.
I just have to disagree. I think that fandom.
Of course you have to disagree.
Fandom is not.
It's genetic predisposition.
Fandom is not geekdom. You know, we're geeks because we like Batman and BattleTech and Battlestar Galactica and other things that begin with B. But fandom means that you are a fan of something. You really like it. It could be. I mean, we're kind of jamming on sports just because it's an obvious example. But I mean, Danielle Steele novels or sports or anything. Crocheting. Oh my God, knitters. Holy crap, knitters can get really pedantic and super focused. Do you know that there was a toilet paper commercial where they were knitting.
Yeah, Quilted Northern.
Yeah, they were quilting, right?
Yeah, Quilted Northern.
With knitting needles. People who were knitters and crocheters wrote in and say, that's not quilting. You have to quilting
but
is
once
what's
again,
the threat.
They're not bitching about something they love. They're bitching
they
about
are
something that they
absolutely
hated.
Bitching about something they love.
They hated the commercial. They hated Quilted Northern for misrepresenting them. It's I just made this great blanket, and then for 3 hours they talk about everything that's wrong
but
with the great blanket they just made.
They do talk about the things they love for hours. They kvetch about all the things they love. I mean, it's a function of fandom, not a function of nerds. People, if they love things, they will go on and on and on and on for 250 episodes for 5 years about it.
Chad loves everything, apparently.
Yeah, wow. Chad is the world's biggest fan.
That's right. I am a fan because you know what?
I hate that.
You know what, Pat? I love people and I love the things that people do. I do love people. I'm a great lover of people. And I love all the things they do. But, you know, and like I said, my point is that I think it is a function of being an obsessive fan of something. It has nothing to do with what you're an obsessive fan about.
Let's move on to an equally inconsequential topic, but one that this show is supposed to be about.
We're going
to
talk about Chris?
We already did.
I said inconsequential, not incontinent.
Not yet.
But the topic that we are going to talk about here today is multiple games at once. I guess not literally at once.
Oh, I like the sound of this already.
That'd be one hell of a feat.
Oh, so I'm sitting at my gaming table. I have my laptop. I'm Skyped into my other game that I'm doing.
And you're Google huddled for another game
I'm running. And then I've got my BlackBerry in my ear called into another game.
Yes. No, what I mean, though, is
all
that
my characters are named Tim, so it all works.
I thought they were all named Gun. The same thing. Yeah, all
my characters' name is Gun.
Do you guys remember the Tim plate? What do you chat? Remember the Tim plate?
It was awesome.
Tim's characters were also similar that we eventually just started referring to the characters he creates as the Tim plate.
That's awesome.
He even made it his email address. It's he did. Timplate@yahoo.com.
He had a good sense of humor about it. Anyway, the point here being, what we're going to talk about is thoughts and advice on being involved in multiple gaming campaigns at the same time. Now, this could be you're GMing both, you're GMing one but not the other, you're playing in both. There's tons of ways to approach this. Let's start off with talking about why people do it and why people don't do it.
Are any of us doing this right now?
I am.
I am as well.
Yes.
I'm not. I have other hobbies.
Oh, I do too. But in my case,
you collect hobbies.
I collect hobbies. But in this case, I'm expressing one hobby twice because of the fact that it's with two separate groups of people. I see one group of friends on Sundays for our D&D game. I game with mostly family, but then also one or two outsiders, you know.
Okay, Dan, which is the favorite? Which is the better game?
They're just very different games.
I hate
to sound like do the cheesy parent here. I love my kids equally. They're just different, even though, you know, every parent has favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Send the hate mail to Chris@truthofthepeak.com.
He has plenty of kids and only one favorite.
That's right.
We're not saying which one.
But we know, and they know. But anyway, I am doing this right now in that I have the D&D game with obviously this group where I am playing. Now, when this campaign ends, it is very likely I'll take over GMing. With my other group, I am currently GMing. We started on D&D campaign and after a while decided that because of the number of scheduling conflicts and such, it would be easier for us to play something episodic. And so we dropped the D&D campaign and have started a Star Trek campaign where the missions last between 1 and 3 sittings. And it is much, much easier for us to keep going. But I'm right now GMing one and playing in the other.
My case is very different because I'm just a player in both of them. Only one of the games is actually a face-to-face game. That's our D&D game. Other than that, I've got a Skype superhero game, and I've started on a Skype Star Trek game that's going to be starting soon here. And so that's why it's very different for me, is because those games are Skype. They're not in person.
Well, I'm not currently playing in multiple campaigns, but I have in the past. It's always been playing. I haven't really run a game and played in one. Well, no, I guess that's not true. I guess on the time that I did GM, I was GMing and playing. So I've sort of done what Dan's doing, but not at the moment, just in the past.
To my recollection, I have never played in multiple games at the same time. It's just not something that interests me. I kind of like to focus on one game at a time. And I also have a lot of other stuff going on in my life usually, and I just don't have time for it.
And thinking about it, I came up with two big reasons why I think a lot of people don't do this. One is time. I mean, as Chad said, you only have so many hours in the week. If you've got a lot of other stuff going on, if maybe for some of your friends this is not their preferred social outlet, then you just only have time for one game. I mean, heck, we've had people write into the show saying they literally get together with their gaming group once a year for their game. Yeah. And so for some people, this just may be a time issue. The other one is creative bleed. For some people, it takes a lot of creative energy, especially if they're game mastering, to come up with the plots, to come up with the characters, and to have to come up with twice the content, to have to keep it all separate in your mind, to have to remember what you've said in which group and what's going on where, especially if the campaigns are similar, this could get really mentally taxing.
Yep. And especially if there are any other players that cross over as well.
Oh, yeah, because they're going to call you, because if you let slip something in one game that's a major plot point, and once again, if you're running the same or similar plot lines for two groups, they're going to come over to that other group with some meta knowledge or, you know, they're going to start seeing and noticing your ruts, even in completely different games, a lot faster than other people would.
I think for that reason, the idea of the bleed, I don't want that to happen. That's why I want different genres. I want different systems. I don't want to play the same system in two groups at a time, because even that would become difficult for me.
Well, and that's the upside to it, is the ability to have variety. One of the things we struggled with in our group a lot is the new shiny. I'll tell you that I am very happy right now to be able to play in both a fantasy and a science fiction game. I am very happy to have two very, very distinct sorts of games going on because of the fact that I can scratch two itches at once.
And so, you know the best thing about it? When, for some reason, you can't get together with the group 1 week, you still have a game that week?
Yeah, it's just with a different group. Conversely, though, the downside to that is I'm having a week where I'm just feeling particularly antisocial. Instead of going to one game, I have to go to two. Yeah. Another application of this, we have heard from other groups, and I don't think our group has ever done anything quite like this, but we have heard from folks in other groups on our forums and such who talk about how within their group, they have two campaigns running at the same time in the same group. And the reason they do that is because the game masters may want to be able to take time off. They may want a break. And so therefore, they may go every other week, or they may go, you know, like every other month, or who knows what, where they'll run one campaign for a little bit and one GM is sick of running it. Whether they switch games or switch game masters or switch both games and game masters, they flip to a different campaign or style of campaign and then keep going from there until that guy's done and they flip back. And so there are some advantages, despite the added work, the creative bleed, to trying to use this model of running multiple campaigns. All right, so with the groundwork set out of what it is we're talking about and why you might want or not want to do it, which side do you guys want to start with, the Game Master side or the player side?
The housewife side.
No, they don't get a say.
They get more than you think.
That is true.
Doesn't matter to me. I don't have anything really to say on the Game Master side other than just
you don't have anything to say
comments
on the podcast. So All right, so fine. I guess we'll just go ahead and get the inevitable out of the way and start with the Game Master side. Pat, go ahead and shake your ice around or whatever it is you need to do for the next, you know. Yeah, thank you.
I'll blow my nose, too, if you want.
The biggest issue that I think a Game Master would struggle with in running two games is the one we mentioned here and the possible downsides, which is memory blur. It makes it very hard to keep straight exactly what is going on in each campaign, what they have discovered in each campaign, where they're at, where you were at in the flow of the story, what the big cliffhanger you left off on was. And I think even in distinct campaigns, even if one's fantasy horror and the other's sci-fi comedy, there is still a level of distinction that you have to keep mentally. And this is where I think even if you're an improv GM, you're going to have to at least take some kind of brief closing notes, just kind of as a reminder of this is where we were at, this is what we were doing, this is what I need to go back into. Because I'll tell you, for me, on a week-to-week game, there's a flow. Whether I'm playing or game mastering, there's a flow. It's like watching a movie. I cannot watch a movie halfway through, pause it, come back to it 2 weeks later and watch it again. I have to restart the movie because there was a flow that I was in. Video games, same way. If I play through the first 3 hours of a video game and then get distracted for 6 months, when I come back, I'm starting a new character and beginning again. Not going to pick up from where I left off. And I think with games, you've got to deal with the same thing. You have to keep that flow going in your heart, mind, and soul so that you can keep that narrative, you can keep that feel going despite those breaks, interruptions, and movements.
You know, I just envision this situation. You walk in, you know, you're getting ready to set the scene for your players, and it's like, well, Bill comes in and tells you this. Who's Bill? Oops. I would definitely have to do heavy notes because I would have no idea which NPC, which group had dealt with.
You know, I can see the pros side of this being that if you were going to run the same plot lines for two different groups, it would cut down on some of your work as a GM.
I mean,
you don't have to, you're not developing two separate campaigns and two separate, you know, adventures. But on the flip side of that, I think the real downside to that would be, as you well know from what you've seen with the different groups you've played with, not every group is going to run at the same rate, at the same pace. So what I mean there is, you run an adventure. One group, they may be really quick and decisive. They may get through your adventure in one session. The other one, it might take them 5 or 6 sessions to get through it. And talk about having to remember stuff. I mean, in one group, you've barely started the adventure. The other group, they finished it and you're on to something else.
Well,
I think almost immediately you will not be in parity because that rate difference.
Well, and not just pacing, but also the evolution of events. Let's say, for example, that I was running Star Trek for both groups. Well, Star Trek is fairly episodic. The missions begin, the missions end. I could put you guys on missions that have almost nothing to do with each other from one game to the next. But let's say in one particular game, they decide in the middle of one mission, they've had it, and a group of them kind of decide to go rogue from Starfleet. Mm. The other group's not doing that. Well, suddenly, even in this isolated episodic story, I now have two groups going in radically different directions. If I have something that's much more of a persistent narrative, you start off in this particular kingdom and we're going to follow through this world-rending plot, who they befriend and who they make enemies of and which way they go, and one party goes north and one party goes south, and all of a sudden what could have been and may be recyclable material now takes some additional thought. I had a series of missions written that I could run for both Star Trek groups, but because you guys have gone this direction, I'm going to have to readapt some of my ideas. Because you guys went south instead of north, all right, there's some NPCs, but now instead of being from this group with these objectives, he's now from that group with different objectives, but maybe is still trying to accomplish something pretty similar. And so I think you can still cherry pick and recycle ideas, but you have to be really careful to still tailor it to what each group is doing so they don't feel like they're just being force-fed modules in order to keep them on this sterile and equal path.
It almost sounds like a train wreck just waiting to happen. I think in listening to this, my almost advice would be as a GM is not to try to run two campaigns that are sort of the same thing unless you just have two groups that are just really, really wanting to do the same thing. I think if you're going to do two things, pick a different genre, pick a different setting, and don't try to do it, because I think it's going to quickly spin out of control and just be more of a headache than it's worth.
Idea of cutting work,
look at me talking on this topic.
I know.
I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I need to shut up.
On your idea of cutting work, though, I love the idea of taking the characters that one group is playing. Those are now fully developed characters that you can rip off and throw into your other game as NPCs. Yeah.
I think that it would be great to run the same game for two different groups of people at the same time, because one group would be your testing group and the other one would get the more fleshed out ideas. Not necessarily better ideas, but ideas where you kind of like, that really worked. And you know what? I bet I can do this just slightly differently with these guys and really make it shine.
I hope that would go back and forth, though, because I'd hate to always be the guinea pig.
Well, slow down and let the other group pass you.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think you will get to a point, unless you have two groups that are really spoon-fed, stay-on-the-rails type of group, there has to be a point where the two groups would diverge, and then that divergence would keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger until you get to a point where it's almost two different kinds of games. And how improv or how off the rails your group is, how much initiative your group has, that divide becomes sooner and sooner and wider and wider. The more on the rails they are, the more, roll up the plot wagon and start spoon feeding the little baby birds. Well, those two plots will be close together. But the only problem I see with it is one where I don't understand how teachers can teach. And what I mean by that is if I go to high school and I sit there and I go to math class first hour, I go there for an hour and then I go to the next hour is history. And that's cool for me and because it's variety. That math teacher, the next hour he's teaching math. Probably the same class out of the same textbook, and then an hour after that he's teaching the same class, the same students, and then maybe he has an advanced class, but it's still math. He's still in the ballpark. I don't understand how teachers can stand to teach the same thing over and over and over and over again throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the years, but they obviously can. It's obviously not a problem that I'm faced with, but I think that there are people who have that mindset with the GM. They can tell the same story to two different groups and still have a lot of fun.
Well, and not speaking to teachers, but taking this back to gaming.
I just use teachers. Well,
right, and it's a totally valid analogy, but one of the things that I can say, for example, at all the Fear of the Cons, I have run at least one game twice where I've used the same plot with two groups. And I have been fascinated every year to watch how two sets of people will end the game in such radically different ways.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up as a point as well. I think all three of us, you, me, and Chad, have talked about that from the various Fear of the Cons. How cool that is as a GM at the end of it to see that. So I see that as a big plus on this idea of running two campaigns at the same time. That's the same story. Because they're going to be very different.
I don't get that when I run, because I generally run my homebrews and stuff. So I'm running like Inception, Lucid, where it's a different game out of the box.
Right.
But that's cool, too, because it's like I hand the players the same questionnaires with the same setup.
Silent Memories is basically the same game, though.
I've only run it twice, and once
and
very was
different
very different.
Endings, and you talked about how
I've had, though, where, like, let's say Fear the Con, I think it was Fear the Con 1, at Bacharysos game. Exact same characters, exact same character write-ups. They weren't real long. They were just, like, little one paragraph, you know, kind of get you thing in the right direction. Exact same setup. And the two groups had radically different solutions to the situation. They had radically different approaches to the situation. And as a game master, I've said many times over, one of the greatest joys I get out of game mastering is watching what people will do with the things that I throw at them. And it was fascinating to see that. Wayne, there was something you said earlier, which we kind of glossed over, and I think deserves development, which is the idea of harvesting ideas from one group to the next. And there's several ways this can manifest. I remember once I was playing in a Star Wars game, and I think I've mentioned this on the show, where the game master had two groups that were in the same universe, dealing with the same plot. He just was careful to see to we were never in the same place at the same time. But nonetheless, what we did affected the other group and vice versa. You could take this a different direction. Let's say they're two completely unrelated campaigns. But nonetheless, let's say, Wayne, your character, an idea, or something you do in one game is really neat. I can readapt that to the next game. Your character can suddenly become the basis for a non-player character, good guy or villain, in my other game. Some idea you pitch out could be a wonderful thing to include within my other game. And you know what? You also have a great sounding board, because when you're sitting around getting ready to start the game, especially if you don't have any overlap between the groups, you can say to one group, hey, I'm about to have this happen in my game and I'm kind of stuck on something. What's a good plot idea for this? And all of a sudden you have this great sounding board for people to throw stuff at you to say, hey, this would work. This is stupid. This would work. This is stupid.
Oh, I love that idea for bad guys. If I were in two games, you know, at once, and I was having a problem figuring out what was the bad guy going to do next, I would totally take it to the other group and be like, okay, you know, here's my bad guy. Here's what they're trying to do. What would you guys do if you were playing this game and you were that character?
Let's talk about this from the player aspect. Obviously, the advantage to playing in multiple games is, well, you just get twice your gaming. I think the advantage...
More gaming,
the
better.
Advantages and disadvantages are pretty similar. I think there is one issue that needs to be discussed a little bit on its own, because while it is similar to a game mastering issue, it is not the exact same. We talked about the memory blur with game masters. You may have to remember exactly where you were going with each game, what the feel of each game was, what the plot was, where the characters were at, what they figured out, haven't figured out. But if you're playing in multiple campaigns, you still have the same issue, because if you are running two characters, three characters, four characters, whatever it is, you have to distinguish in your mind the personalities, the progression, the feel, the continuity of where this person is at in their growth throughout the game. And especially if you're into a deeper level of RP, there's a lot here to keep straight, to keep separate in your mind. And one of the things that I would hate to do as a player is to come to one game and to only kind of half-ass the character because of the fact that throughout the course of the week, when I'm thinking about gaming, my attention is so split between two or three characters that I'm starting to confuse them, or I'm not developing them as well as I should be, or I'm not suddenly discovering things about their personality as I think them through because of the fact that my attention is divided between these characters.
I personally have never had a problem with that, and I think it's mainly due to when you first develop a character, if you develop a strong enough personality in that character that's memorable to you and it's, you know, uniquely different than your other characters, I've not had a problem with that. And also beyond that, it's not just your character that you're basing your memories of what's going on off of. It's the other players around the table. For me, whenever I step into a game, it helps me to immediately be in that world with the other characters as well, because then I cue off of things to help me remember what's going on. It's not much different than, say, if I read two different books at the same time, or I'm watching, you know, a handful of different television shows. We've got enough of an attention span and a memory to be able to do that kind of a thing.
Wow, I wouldn't read two different books at the same time for the same problem.
Oh, well,
you mean like a book in each hand?
You read comics. You read multiple titles at the same time. You can keep that straight.
Yeah,
I usually have multiple books going at the same time.
We can compartmentalize things pretty well.
I have never read two fiction books at the same time, ever.
I don't really do this as much anymore because I don't read as much as I used to, but I used to have a book by my bed, a different book in the bathroom. Yes, I'm one of those gross people who do that.
Hey, I read the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy in the bathroom at work.
So there's reasons why I don't borrow books from Wayne.
I had a book by my bookstand that I read for a little bit before I went to bed. I had a book in the bathroom. I had what I called my main book that I was reading. This is a book I took everywhere and was reading. And then I had a travel book that I would throw in a bag, and then I would read like a chapter every now and again when I would travel. I usually have four to five books at one time.
I think, though, Pat, you hit on something important, which is it comes down to knowing yourself and knowing what it takes for you to compartmentalize things. There may be some people out there who can play two or three similar characters and keep them separate. There may be somebody out there who says, look, I can't compartmentalize at all, so I'm just going to play the same character in both games.
Yeah.
There may be, on the flip side, someone like, for example, me. I am reading two books at once now. I'm actually reading three.
What are they?
One of them is a fiction book. I am reading through Journey to the West still.
Nice.
One of them is a nonfiction book. I am reading a book on, it's actually a book written by like a Harvard psychologist, something like that, on people who are chronically dissatisfied and unhappy, which is one of those things I need
cheery.
To work. Yeah. Well, I need to read through something like this because I am chronically cynical about everything, and I need to change my attitude in that regard, which is great because this guy, the book is called Happier. And when I first picked this up, I'm like, this is going to be pop psych crap. Mm-hmm. And the very first chapter is him basically saying, pop psych has destroyed psychology. I hate it. We're not going to go there in this book. I'm not going to give you four easy steps to feel better because they don't exist. Nice. It's a very, so far, I'm pretty impressed with it.
Cool.
And then the third book, and I don't want to do a religious thing, but as someone who is a believer, I try to read the Bible a little bit every night.
Sure.
All right, so those are the three books I read at once. But you know what? These three books, to me, have nothing in common. One is Chinese fiction.
Mm-hmm.
One is American psychological nonfiction, and the third is Middle Eastern religious text. You know, these three books have really nothing in common, and so I don't have to get confused by the fact that why is Moses headed east instead of west?
Why is Moses flying on a cloud?
Yeah,
is that awesome?
Is it making him any happier? I'm totally lost here. But I'm ability to compartmentalize those because of the fact that I know I could not, for example, read, let's say, Journey to the West and, what's another Chinese fiction? Like, let's say, Book of Stones. The book has like 15 titles, depending on which translation you pick up. But I could not read, like, let's say, or Journey to the West and Three Kingdoms at the same time, because they would probably just blur together in my mind. I wouldn't be able to keep them separate.
I wouldn't be able to keep the name straight.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this to sound, you know, I don't know, jingoistic or whatever, but it would be too similar to me.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing.
I would get that on European books, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
The name confusion, I didn't even think about. I have that problem enough as it is that if I was playing in two games that were the same genre or reading two books of the same genre, I'd have no clue what anyone's name is. I might not even know what my own character name was at that point.
And this is why I think on this topic, I would give the reverse our usual advice. Our usual advice is know your group, but in this one, it's turn it around. Know yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How much time do you have? How much creativity do you have? How much do you need to compartmentalize these characters or these plot lines to give them each what they deserve?
Yeah, I know in my case, I need different genres. Different systems helps as well, but definitely different genres and very different personalities. I would not play Sir William in another game at the same time. It would just be the same character to me. I wouldn't be getting anything out of it anymore.
Yeah, I like the variety of it. In general, the times that I've played multiple campaigns in the past, it has been two different types. It's been a sci-fi and a D&D or modern campaign and something else. Just because I like the variety. I don't want to play the same thing twice a week. Give me something new, something different. Variety, it's the spice of life, people.
Allah loves wondrous variety.
Yeah. I hate that.
Why? Because a person said it?
Because a person said it. Morgan Freeman said it, but he did say it in a movie with Kevin Costner.
That is Freeman, people though. And the people thing that the people things do. Yeah, and
I love Morgan Freeman, though.
He plays the
Samuel L. Jackson.
I actually can't stand Morgan Freeman because he plays the same exact character.
You're a horrible person.
Yeah, here's
he does it really well. One character is great.
Here's
but
the
it's
thing
only
I gotta
one
say.
Character.
Having
he was Spider-Man. God damn it!
What?
Morgan Freeman was Spider-Man on The Electric Company.
Great.
In the costume.
Well, here's the thing. Have you ever seen any really, really old Morgan Freeman
stuff? And Morpheus was Cowboy Curtis on Pee-wee Herman.
Back when he was doing stage.
I have not. No.
Like, his first role was the driver of Driving Miss Daisy, which is part of why he was so thrilled to get that role again.
Oh, really?
In the
I didn't
movie,
know that.
Driving Miss Daisy. His first stage role was in the play Driving Miss Daisy. He played the driver.
Huh.
And I will say, I think the problem with Morgan Freeman is not Morgan Freeman. It's Hollywood. Because he has a wonderful acting range that nobody
I'm sure
uses.
He does.
He's the grandfatherly black man in every movie, regardless of what the movie is about.
Same tone of voice. It's the same character. True. Same type.
Typecasting's a real bitch.
And it's not that he's incapable of acting outside of that range. It's that's what he's been typecast
down to.
You
know, he makes a lot of money doing it.
Yeah. And
good for him.
And he seems perfectly comfortable doing it. So, yeah, I'm with you. Good for him.
But I'm not running out and seeing a movie just because Morgan Freeman's in it, because I know what I get.
Yeah.
I'll watch Shawshank Redemption. I'll watch that over and over again. I love that movie.
I love relatively recent Morgan Freeman film, if we take the Batman ones off the table, it's Unleashed. I loved him Unleashed.
Yeah,
Unleashed. Now, once again, he played the grandfatherly black man. He played the same guy he does in
it's a kung fu movie, so it was awesome.
Yet somehow he made that work, and I think it was that weird disconnect, that dissonance that made it work so well. I say dissonance, and that's funny because he was a piano tuner. But to wrap this episode out, I want to talk about Fear the Con 5, because something that Wayne pointed out to me is there's apparently a lot of people that are not aware of the fact that we're changing some things up for Fear the Con 5.
We have listeners that are on the forums.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, we have listeners who magically don't know what we're thinking. So let me explain what's going on with Fear the Con 5 just so everyone can get prepped for what's going to happen. There are some changes coming this year. In my mind, the vast, vast majority of them are all very positive changes. I'm actually really excited about it. But these are things that we want to pass on to you guys because we want to see you all there. First off, we are changing its location. While we very much enjoy
Des Moines, Iowa. Boom. There we go. Let's drop that bomb right now.
Chris is pumped. while we very much enjoyed Memorial Hall, we had some problems regarding the limitation of space, the fact that it was somewhat far from the hotel and hard to find, and also the fact that because it was the middle of subdivision, if you needed a grocery store, a drugstore, anything like a restaurant, yet none of that was nearby. You had to navigate some kind of winding streets to find it. So what we're doing instead is this year, instead of being at Memorial Hall, we are going to be at a place called the Maryland Heights Community Center. And I will link this in the show notes so you can look up for yourself where it is. It is literally half a mile from the block of hotels that we normally use. Now, in order to get this place, we had to change the dates of Fear the Con. So instead of being in March, it is now the first weekend of May. Okay, I don't know the dates off the top of my head, but just pull up a calendar. It's the first weekend of May. So that is when Fear the Con 5 is going to occur. And we're also probably going to move our hotel block from the hotel we've been using to the Drury Inn across the street, just because there's been a lot of complaints about the sliding quality of that hotel.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the date change. It may be difficult for some people, but there are a lot of things when we do the tourism before or after the con that we haven't been able to do because of the dates. Grant's Farm, for example. Grant's Farm is a free thing we could have taken people to, all of these years, but it wasn't open in March.
And leaves will be on trees.
Yeah, and if it's warm enough, the Maryland Heights Community Center includes a water park. So if it's warm enough, before or after the convention, people can get out there and do some swimming and water slides and all that kind of silliness. Six Flags is another one. I'm not saying we do it, but it's an option that just wasn't possible before because of the timing of when it was occurring. Now, because we have switched to the Maryland Heights Community Center, they do not provide beer, which is actually a great thing because as a result, Danger Brewery, who was doing a lot of the beer tasting stuff last year, is now our custom craft brewers. And they're going to be bringing several kegs of custom brewed beer that won't be Bud Light. So now we have asked them to make some lighter beers and also to make some ciders for people that don't want Mikey Mace and beer you can walk on sort of stuff.
What's wrong with that?
To me, something to other people, nothing. And that's, you know what, taste is taste and a totally personal thing. And I'm cool with that.
You're wrong.
Okay. But wrong as I am, they are going to be bringing a really good variety of high quality beers. I am pumped up about that. The only change that is, I guess I'll describe it as somewhat negative, but is a necessary change, is we are trying to bring the convention closer to breaking even financially. As a result, ticket price will go up a little bit. We will not jack it through the roof.
$80.
Yes. $80 to $120. No, this is not going to be Gen Con prices. I'm talking probably like $30.
$120 Shaw package. we carry you in on our shoulders.
But I'm probably talking the ticket price may go up by like $5. And also the wing night at Cybergs, I may have to look at some other way of financing the food, because the food build there gets really freaking expensive. So I may have to look at some other way of financing that. But
do a Kickstarter for a wing night.
Hey, I like it.
You know what? If people contributed to it, I would have no problem doing it. But here's the point. The basic point is the convention is still going to be the same great con with the same people. I know there's a lot of games that are going to get run again. We're going to have much better quality beer. Chad and Wayne have already scoped out the new location, say it looks great. We'll have wonderful space to work with. Casey's coming back. I believe Geeky Clean's going to be back. It's just going to be in a different place, and it's just going to be on a slightly different date.
But I'm scared of change.
And if you're scared of change, then come anyway, and we will unscare you, which is totally grammatically.
Okay, I have to ride back to my car in his truck when he's making sounds like that.
Lucky bastard.
All right, so for those of you that don't attend Fear the Con, first of all, look in the mirror, figure out what the hell's wrong with you, and be at Fear the Con 5. But if it's just impossible for some reason, I do apologize. But nonetheless, these are things we need to communicate to our community, because a lot of people who don't follow us on Twitter or on Facebook or on the forums or whatnot had no idea that we were making these changes. So I wanted to get out there that Fear the Con 5 is still on, but some of the details are going to be different. We tend to divide the Fear the Boot fiscal year into two semesters, which is the Fear the Con to Gen Con run, and then the Gen Con to Fear the Con run. So expect to see Con Planner go up and a whole lot more details come out once we get past Gen Con. So you will see a whole lot more on Fear the Con then. But in the meantime, just do note, it will be on a different date this year. So I think that's all we got for this episode. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. I want to thank everyone for the great support they've shown us in so many ways.
I want to thank Kicked in the Dice Bags for having me on again.
Big shock. As for the rest of you guys, thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later days.
Oh, you whore.
I am a whore.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.